screen starts glowing, and the film starts rolling. You wanna be knowing what you might be in for, so give the show a listen. In front of what you're missing, put yourself in position. But the instinct gets your
We just talked about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and now we're counting down our top five Walt Disney Animation Studio movies. I know we're a little short on time here, but we have about 20 minutes until we need to wrap up for Brian. So I think we'll probably just dive into it. We'll do a rotating 555-444-333-222-111, and you can do a prelude onto how you thought about this list as we go through it. But so, Brian, why don't you go first? Why don't you tell us, how did you think about this list? Maybe, I know you watched a lot. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, what you watched in the past week. And what is your number five?
Yes. So as we said a little while ago, Dan and I were both short about 15 movies out of the 62 that we hadn't seen before. I went ahead and rectified that. I feel like I owed it to the podcast to do that at some point, do a deep dive marathon.
Pull a Dan.
Yes, to pull a Dan. And I'd always meant to watch all the Disney animated features eventually. Actually, just recently, I had checked off a couple. I watched Melody Time and Make Mine Music a few weeks ago. So I thought, if not now, when? And so in the last, like, 3.5 days, I watched Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Dumbo, Saludos Amigos, The Three Caballeros, Fun and Fancy Free, Brother Bear, Home on the Range, Chicken Little, Winnie the Pooh, 2011, Frozen 2, Raya and the Last Dragon, Strange World, and Wish.
Wow.
That is a lot for 1 week, Brian.
Yeah. all of the things that you hadn't previously had an interest in watching.
True.
So it's like a bunch of stuff that you didn't want to watch enough to watch it for fun all at once.
Right. So it's a chore. It blends together. Doesn't probably have the best effect on the ratings that I ultimately gave them. None of those cracked my top five.
Yeah.
Not even Home on the Range? Just kidding.
Not even Home on the Range. I put that at... I have firmer bottom ratings than I have top ratings. I had Home on the Range like third from the bottom. The worst one, Fun and Fancy Free to me. And that's a pretty firm one. Not because of the subject, although Bongo the Bear didn't do anything for me.
Sure.
I mean, I like Mickey and the Beanstalk, but I grew up with the redubbed version where it's narrated by Ludwig von Drake, Paul Frees, which I think is much better than the, not Candice Bergen, Edgar Bergen is the original version. And it's constantly being interrupted by the ventriloquist dummy, like offering this, like, just disparaging, like, riff tracks commentary, which is annoying and distracting.
Yes! I like them. I like Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. I think they're fun. They're different.
That one had my pick for the weirdest Disney song of all, which is A Bear Likes to Say It with a Slap.
Yeah, the BDSM song.
Which is a song about how bears show their romantic interest through domestic abuse.
Yeah, it's something. I don't think it's ecologically accurate. Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe they'll do a live action remake of that one, Brian. Modern CGI. But what do you have at number five, Brian?
Okay, my number five I had, and this changed just today because I went ahead and rewatched it. Bumping up from number six to number five is The Hunchback of Notre Dame from 1996. Now, this just goes way darker than you would expect from most Disney movies, at least in the fairly recent era. The architecture is incredible. The camera is always moving. It's a story well told. Obviously, it jukes and jives and avoids some of the darker stuff from the book. But, I mean, it opens with Frollo killing a mother on the church steps and then immediately is going to go and dump the baby in the well.
That everyone drinks out of.
Good point.
That struck me. I watched it the other day and I was like, wait a minute. No wonder the priest wants them to stop. They get their water from there.
It gets some weird sores on your mouth. Isn't that what happens if you eat something contaminated with human flesh? I watched this one for the first time in 15 years this week too. And spoiler, I have it at number 6. I actually had it at number 5 and just moved it down at the last minute. It's so good.
I had it at number 6. I had it at number 6, and maybe that's where it belongs, but I was moved.
And I was like, oh, the gargoyles. But you can, like, shove them to the side. They're not that prominent. And they're not great. But it doesn't bother me that much. And it's really just such a dark and rich story. And Mankin is doing some of his all-timer work in that. That's such a good... I love... God Help the Outcast so much.
Oh, and the lyrics from Stephen Schwartz. I could just tell that he was like ready to take on his own project. And then the next year he did the music and lyrics for Prince of Egypt.
Good, great pick at number 5. I'll go number 5 next. And to me, it's an essential part of being a Disney fan that you have a weird favorite. And so, like, I don't actually think this is the 5th best. And I might feel kind of weird, like, looking back, you really think that's the number 5 Disney movie? I don't know, but it's my movie. I love it. I know it inside and out. Out of all of Disney movies, this is probably the one I would just hit play on. Like, if I had an hour and a half to burn and didn't want to engage intellectually with something just because I love it that much. And that is Hercules from 1997, Clements and Musker. You got the 3 screwball comedy characters in there with Meg and Hades and Phil. And just tremendous character design. Like, it came from the Sunday funny pages. Terrific use of color. It's one of the funniest of the Disney movies. And unlike the similarly funny Emperor's New Groove, which I think just more or less tosses story out the window, this one actually has like a engaging story from start to finish. I don't know if it's fair to call it a masterpiece because it's got some of like the Aladdin type of humor. Now that I think about it, it's Clements and Musker. And didn't they also do Aladdin where it throws in some of the timeliness and like references, which maybe doesn't play quite as well, but honestly doesn't bother me that much. And it is pretty funny. The Hydra CGI sticks out a little bit, but it does kind of represent like this big, scary force. So I don't hate it. It does. And that's definitely the slowest part whenever I rewatch is the Hydra attack. But man, I love the voice work in this. Hercules himself is maybe a little dull, but I love Meg so much. I love all the side characters are very funny. And that's Phil's boy. Oh, and I didn't even mention the soundtrack, like the upbeat gospel framing everything with the muses being like this gospel choir adds so much energy and life to it. Just some of my favorite, catchiest upbeat numbers by Disney are in this. Love the closer, A Star Is Born. So that's my number 5 is Hercules. Maybe not actually the number 5, but in my heart, we'll call it number 5.
I love Hercules. I think it's a great movie. The only thing holding it back from like a full 10 out of 10 for me.
What's that?
There's an emergency. Call IXII. And the reason why is not that it's an anachronistic joke. It's that it's 2 layers of anachronism. Those are not Greek numerals.
Yeah, that's Roman numbers. Yeah.
That bothers me so much.
They do a lot of the mixing up the Greek and Roman stuff.
I mean, even just calling him Hercules.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
All right, Hunter, what's your number 5?
My number 5 is Tangled from 2010. That's where Disney, Walt Disney Animation Studios in their under their new nom de plume, finally cracked human animation and CGI at the same time. Like, I actually still think it is the best CGI character animation that Walt Disney has done. Even though it's 14 years old, I still don't think they've actually really improved it.
The leap from Bolt to Tangled.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty impressive gap. And beyond that, like, you also have like the new ways that they were doing backgrounds to sort of give it a more painterly patina, while not surrendering any of the dynamism of camera movement and everything like that. I think it's just a really, really good movie. It really does hold up, even though it is fairly early in, I guess, it's somewhat middle era as far as CGI animation goes, but it looks still really good. And it's a really great romance, and it has a really good villain, and it has decent songs.
Yeah.
Good enough songs. And it has the floating lantern scene.
Oh, so good.
Which I was not aware was a real phenomenon the first time I watched Tangled, so I may overrate it on that account. I thought that was something they invented. I thought it was so imaginative. And they shouldn't exist. They're quite dangerous.
They're fun, though.
I'm sure they're very fun until the wildfire comes.
Brian, what do you have at number four?
Number four for me, I have Pinocchio from 1940, which is like they took their profits from Snow White and reinvested it, built up the studio, and just like really went artsy on this one. Have all the layers of colors and depth and light, and like all the clockwork stuff is cool. It introduced the When You Wish Upon a Star, which kind of became the studio anthem. I like it. I think this is another one that is probably buoyed by historical importance. And then they didn't really get back to all guns a-blazing until after World War II. So there was kind of a lull. And you almost wonder, like, what if they had been able to continue on uninterrupted while Walt Disney was young.
Animation historian Tim Brayton, who came up earlier, has that as his number one. I will say that this is kind of me transitioning into my number four, that I shortlisted which movies I wanted to talk about for my top five, and I had 13 on that list, and like really any of them you could slot into number three, four, or five, so it's kind of arbitrary, and tomorrow my list might be different. I currently have Pinocchio at number seven, so just short of the list. I talked about my number six already too, but I think there are good reasons for it to be that high. And we're short on time, so I won't rebut why I don't quite have it in the top five. But for my number four, I actually have Tangled. I wanted a little bit of variety. I could have gone Golden Age, another Golden Age in there like Pinocchio. But to me, Tangled has just risen in my ranks every time I watch it. Part of that is because like a movie's music, for me at least, I don't know about everyone else, but like if I listen to music a lot, I tend to be more fond of it. It's like familiarity makes compositions more beloved, I guess. Like it's easier to swallow them like that. So me playing this on loop for my daughters, the soundtrack, makes me like the music more, because I do agree that the music is not the best out of Disney's later era.
It's not bad, though. It's just not banger level stuff until you really
completely agree. Yeah.
Until you've really like soaked yourself in it.
Right. And the one thing I'd add on to what Hunter said is that the voice work is really good. I really like Zach Levi and Mandy Moore. Mandy Moore, maybe the best post-Renaissance, at least, vocal performance. And I'd put it up there with the best Renaissance vocal performances too.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
For reference, I had Tangled at seven, number seven.
Nice. Okay. Hunter, what do you have at number four?
Number four, I have Aladdin. And Ron Clements and John Musker are going to be a very common fixture in my top five list. And everybody loves Aladdin. I think, like, you know, it naturally manages to balance its really, really anachronistic humor with like kind of a very, very good action adventure romance. And really just by personifying a mad supernatural being in Robin Williams, I think is how it gets away with that. And just limit it to him. He has a phenomenal cosmic powers. Of course he knows who Arsenio Hall is.
That's true.
Great color style, too.
One of the best Disney characters, at least just watching him. So good. And Aladdin was on my list of 13, but it's not going to be in my top five.
Ah, pity.
Brian, what do you have at number three?
Number three, I put Bambi. Just because I think it captures so well the progression of time. It gives us a year, so the cycle of the seasons, but pairs that with the fact that animals live shorter lives than humans do. So it's like the whole cycle of life and death and rebirth and of generations tied to the annual cycle, and is really just operating at a high point in terms of capturing nature via animation. And I think the best example of that is the April shower number, where they conduct a rainstorm. And so you got this choral vocals, but also the way that they obviously studied like water dripping into water, and the way each one like plip, plip, just, you know, pops a little bit off the ground when it falls. It looks great. And you have the way that the pace changes and gets more menacing, and then the clouds part and it dissipates.
Bambi is also my number three. I think Bambi is a masterpiece, or like maybe just a hair's breadth short if you're going to hold the music against it at all. I don't remember too much of it after I watch it. It does kind of flow pretty well. And then there's a couple of segments that are a little too cartoony, maybe. But man, oh, so good. The power of nature. And it really has that mythic scope. And yeah, I mean, all of it's a metaphor for humans growing up, but it also is just a beautiful tribute to nature and the power of the world around us and the cycles of that and the interconnectedness of all of that. And yeah, man in general is the danger. Like our own human flaws are what bring us down. And it's just such a sweeping, touching, apocalyptic rebirth ending. Honestly, it might be the best ending to any Disney movie, with maybe Fantasia up there. It's glorious, great character design. I love is he called the Prince of the Forest? The regal absent father that Bambi then becomes.
The deadbeat dad.
Exactly.
He's a deer. It's their way.
Right. And I'm glad it doesn't put too much of a point on everything being human.
Yeah, I actually, I agree. Yeah. If you guys have never read the book is also really great.
Oh, really? I had it as a kid, but I never read it.
That book might actually be better. Weirdly enough. Wow. It's terrific. Felix Salten's Bambi, A Life in the Woods. Just figured I'd recommend that.
That's great. Yeah. So I absolutely love Bambi.
Number three, Moana.
Moana.
Just a great adventure. And actually a really great musical, surprisingly, considering Lin-Manuel Miranda is involved. But it's terrific. Yeah. Ron Clements and John Musker.
Yeah, that's their big comeback.
Yeah, their big comeback.
I was surprised that it was them when I was reading through stuff a couple months ago, looking at all the Disney canon. I was like, oh, they're back. I didn't know that they had made. Have they done any since Moana?
John Musker did a hand-drawn animated short that was shortlisted for the Oscars this year, but didn't get nominated. But I think that's it. I think they might be working on something at WDS, but I'm not 100% sure what that is.
That might be the most off consensus pick that comes out here today, other than Hercules. So kudos to you for sticking to your guns on that one.
All right.
Brian, what do you have at number two?
So first I'll just say that my weird personal favorite pick I've got at number six, Wreck-It Ralph, which I like Wreck-It Ralph. I don't know. It's like, I thought that was a well done one, but obviously it's to taste. It's not going to be everyone's favorite or a huge hallmark in history. But what I have at number two is a common favorite. Is a hallmark in animation history. It's The Little Mermaid.
All right.
Just great undersea visuals, really established that what we're doing with Disney movies going forward is channeling Broadway. We're going to bring in Broadway stars and Broadway composers and lyricists And that's the template we're going to work from, and did it with aplomb. I mean, if you look at the movies that were coming out in the 80s, this is a quantum leap.
You know who directed that, I assume, Brian?
Musker and Clements, yes. So
it's gonna...
they're going to be a fixture.
It is also my number two. I think the first half of The Little Mermaid might be like the best animated movie of all time. Like, it would be probably at the top of my Disney ranking if it sustained that through the end. I do think it loses steam a little bit when she comes out of the water, like after she has the sexual awakening of sorts when she gets transformed, except then she kind of becomes more childlike, which doesn't quite fit. But, you know, you don't need to project too hard onto that. But man, everything you just said, Brian, absolutely true. The music, phenomenal. When they're underwater, like the bubbles in the water, it's just out of this world. Incredible voice acting, great writing. I absolutely love Little Mermaid. That's my number two.
And part of your world, just that whole number, exquisite. And the way that she's in the cave and it's got the little hole in the roof so the light's going down. And she like goes through the sunbeam as she's circling around.
So beautiful. Brian, decade ago, probably more. No, probably about a decade. No, I don't know how long ago. We did a ranking of the top 50 Disney movies where we aggregated some polls that you and me and maybe just one other person did together. And I had Part of Your World at number two Disney song. And I would stand by that today. I think it's up there for sure. Maybe not exactly number two, but definitely up there.
Yeah, this will actually be my number one, Little Mermaid.
There you go.
Ariel's just the best Disney princess. She's actually like maybe one of the best defined characters in a Disney movie, probably the best. I mean, she has so many different varying motivations. A lot of people like to reduce it just to like a love story, but she wants to investigate the surface world a long time before she ever meets Eric.
She wants to be where the people are.
Yeah, she wants to know what forks do. She also wants to know what a fire is and why it might burn.
It's terrific stuff. So that's your number one.
That's my number one. And
I did notice you had it on your letterbox top four.
Yeah. Well, it was either that or what I'm gonna get for my number two. Is it my go?
Yeah, what's your number two?
Yeah, all right. So this will finish. Is Fantasia. Fantasia is just an incredible work of ambition. Just absolutely majestic film, kind of a mystical history of the universe, if you like actually treat the segments as like some sort of progression from like uncreated formlessness into ultimately like human society and religion banishing darkness into the back into whence it came and like everything in between.
That really struck me when I was I actually watched that this week. Is like, you could make this like a saga of the entire universe if you cut out the Sorcerer's Apprentice and like little bits of it here and there. And it could almost like flow continuously to that incredible ending. Right.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice. You just put that at the beginning. And then it's like Aleister Crowley's fool accidentally putting into motion the events that create the universe. The whole Toth Terra thing, although it actually predates Toth Terra.
I'm really glad that they made Fantasia, and it's a great experiment, a great project, and just a illustration of what animation can do. Some of the segments I like more than others. I think it is maybe a little bit high on its own supply, but I think we owe that to the animators. Like, they're at the top of their game, and like they're the best in the business.
That was my number nine in this list, but again, depending on how you think about it, that's part of the problem. Is there's like so many different ways to think about Disney movies, and they're from so many different eras that like I can see the case, like from an animation and technical achievement, easily top five, probably the number one or number top three or something. But it's really something.
It's pretty long too. That's the only one that's more than 2 hours.
That's true. Yeah. And I did feel myself dragging through some of the ballet one. It's just like, okay, let's get to the part where there's a demon god at the end.
That one's my least favorite.
I suspect Brian and I have the same number one, and I know it's one that Hunter has backlashed in the past.
Okay.
Do you want to go ahead and say it, Brian?
Yeah, so we've talked about this in the past, Dan and I, so it's not surprising that it's his number one, too. Beauty and the Beast from 1991, where they took what they had done with Little Mermaid, Ashman and Macon, and then they did a victory lap. They brought out Beauty and the Beast. They kind of kicked out people who were already working on it and overhauled the project to put it more in the Little Mermaid mold. But I just love the opening with Belle establish the town, establish who Gaston is, and it's just this sweeping Broadway opener. I like the enchanted human characters who kind of have their own motivations. It's like, look, this romance has to work out so that we can be free of our enchanted confinement. I really, really like the music.
Music is incredible. I agree. I mean, if I were to just base it off of music, this might be at the top two. And like, honestly, I was tempted to just do my five favorite soundtracks, and it wouldn't be that much different from what I ended up picking. I probably would have had Lion King on there, which I had at number eight, bumped up to the top five. But then I was like, I don't want to be all Disney Renaissance in my top five. But I mean, I agree with all that. I think it has the most sweeping fairy tale sense of adventure. It's not quite mythic in the same way that the early ones are, but it just makes my heart soar like I'm going on an adventure in the way that plenty of other movies don't. And its themes work so well. Its story is so tight and exciting. Love Gaston. The music is incredible. Everything Brian said, too. And Hunter, you give this one a 7 out of 10, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I don't dislike it. It's just my least favorite movie, the Disney Renaissance. That's all. I don't think I really like the actual Beauty and the Beast story. Like, you can take that archetype and put in different things. I think it's the same with Pinocchio. I actually don't like Collodi's Pinocchio very much. But if you can take that archetype and do all sorts of great things with it. But the actual Beauty and the Beast story is like, dude locks a woman in a dungeon for a while until she's nice to him. Like, ultimately, that is the story.
But it reveals so much about the way that we view the world. But no, I mean, I think there's something to that.
But yeah, I don't want to be too reductive about it. I mean, it's still an enjoyable movie. It does have great songs. Has some of the iffiest or at least like least stable character animation of the Renaissance with Beth. Mm. And I'm not really in love with her character because, you compare it to Ariel, who's an archaeologist and an explorer and a gambler with her own soul. And Belle's character is that she can read.
She likes books, yeah. She can read.
She likes books.
Yeah.
No. She likes picture books.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of my appreciation for the movie is the lyrics. Is, as a specimen, yes, I'm intimidating. And I'm especially good at expectorating.
that's a great line.
I frequently cite going full Gaston when we're eating eggs. It's like, you gotta just house the eggs. Well, unfortunately, we're wrapped on time. I could rap on Disney all day. And Hunter, thank you so much for joining us. I've been loving your reviews over the past few years since I've been reading them, and it was great to finally talk to you in person. It would be great to have you on again. Great, and thanks for coming with the top five and talking Snow White with us.
Thank you. Thanks, Brian.
Oh, yeah. It was a pleasure to meet you, Hunter.
Yeah,
thanks for joining. You write great reviews. Everybody check out Kinemalog and also join our The Goods Discord because we post some supplemental media there. I imagine we'll drop some Disney song clips, if nothing else.
Brian, we have reached the end of a theme month. What are we going to be watching next week?
Oh, geez. Wow. You know, we've got other guests coming up in the not-too-distant future, but what do I want to watch? It's going to be St. Patrick's Day, so let's watch another Disney movie. It's Darby O'Gill and the Little People from 1959. Early leading role from Sean Connery.
All right. I have watched half of this before. I've never seen the whole thing, but I'm excited to talk perspective. What do you call it? Forced perspective with you, Brian?
That's right. Big, small effect. Yeah. Relative scale.
We will enjoy that next week. And Hunter, thank you. Brian, thank you. This was a fun episode, a fun top five. And listeners, thank you as always. Find us on thegoodsfilmpodcast.com. And we'll see you next week. Bye.